All right, here we are.
Here we are.
You know, you need to talk even louder than you.
I know, that's what I'm hearing. We really need to ramp it up. Very excited here recording an episode of Talking Too Loud, the show with the loudest takes on building businesses, on top-notch products, and on building unbeatable brands. So very excited to be here at Inbound doing this. My good pal Brendan with Sylvie.
Great to see you.
And we have a special episode today because actually Sylvie, you're going to be taking over and doing a lot of the questions.
I'm going to be asking you two some very hard-hitting questions about going from point solution software to a platform. But first, I have to ask, because when I get excited,
you tap the mic, yeah.
That happens.
Yeah.
When I get excited, I can't control the volume of my voice.
Oh, okay.
Talk way too loud about too many things. And I need to know, we'll start with you, Chris. What has you talking too loud today?
Oh, my God. Well, I've been saying Lululemon pants a lot, which mm-hmm. you hate before. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to go.
I don't hate.
Look, okay, have you discovered Lululemon pants yet?
Oh, yes. I was in Lululemon earlier today.
He just created.
Were you really?
Not pants, but gym shorts.
Lululemon pants are like pretend pants. They're so comfortable. They look like they're not, but they are. And I just really swear by them right now. But I think my real answer is obviously we just have been reporting tons of episodes of Talk to That here. It's been super energizing, super fun. So excited to keep the ball rolling and do this one.
Amazing. And Brendan Schwartz, welcome. What have you talked to you
loud? I'm a pretty quiet talker, but in general, I guess this is a very in there detail, maybe somewhat self-serving, but this is an honest answer. This morning, we made a change inside Wistia so that after you edit a video or record a video or upload a video, it will be ready to be played back instantly.
Wait, that's a big change.
It is a very big change.
Yeah.
It's something that we've been working on for probably the better part of a year. It's very like kind of a behind the scenes thing, but it is like going to save customers time. This seems
You're jumping the gun a little bit.
I'm jumping the gun, but it's the honest. I've been so excited for this to happen.
I think today, when this was launched,
I was like,
you're like,
beaming.
Guys.
Yeah.
I was beaming.
That's a beautiful thing. Work. You should be beaming.
That's
at work.
What we're looking for.
Well, speaking of beaming, let's look back to Wistia's early days.
Yeah.
What had you beaming then? What was your original vision for the company?
Oh, we're going there. Okay.
Yeah.
You want to start?
Sure. Well,
just put them right
like
in
the original. You go. Like how original do you want the vision?
Like pretty original. Like you were.
Like
this
what
was
made
your
me,
company.
Like,
this
quit
this
my
is,
job to start this company.
Yeah. What did you want to do for people, for customers?
Well, we didn't have any customers back then. We sought to build a competition website for filmmakers.
Okay.
That was our original vision. That vision lasted.
Once we, like.
1 month.
Yeah, about a month.
A website for filmmakers. Okay.
Like a competition website.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We thought big brands would come and it would be like, oh, I'm Coke and we want you to make ads. And then, like, the ads would all be like good marketing for Coke. And if you were a filmmaker and you made an ad, then, like, if Coke used your ad as a, like, for real, that'd be huge for your career. So that was, like, our idea.
And what happened 1 month in?
Well, basically, we started, like, we have no connections to big brands. Like, why are we doing this? And we saw, like, something that looked, like, vaguely competitive, and it scared us. So we just went a different direction.
But this is all new to you.
Yeah.
I really don't know this story.
Yeah, it's funny that you don't know that. We stayed on the vision, obviously, of, like, we saw this huge change coming with video really early on it. Stayed on it, and that all became true. Like, it took us about a year to figure out helping businesses using video, and I mean, that's still what we do today, so it's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add there? Feel like we got...
Well, you said we were beaming from the start. I think we had a lot
yeah,
of...
Yeah, were you beaming?
We were very naive.
Okay.
And I remember that we like had this idea, and it was funny that we finally found our way to business, and the first year of doing this... we had like absolutely zero plan for how to make money, which if you'd like to be in business,
it's helpful to have a plan.
You might want to try to make a little cash. Yeah.
I just remember when we first started connecting with businesses and helping them solve their problems, it was genuinely very exciting, not only because you could be paid and earn a living and keep doing it for a long time, but it was like a tight connection with you can build software, you can see it help someone. very directly.
So then you were beaming.
Then we were beaming again. We're back to beaming.
I love it.
It is funny, though, when you talk about that, it makes me think of, we raised one, like, angel round.
Yeah.
And we were running out of money from the angel round, but we had customers. And okay. That summer, we'd gone from, like, 30 customers at the beginning of the summer to, like, 200 at the end. So we felt like we'd, like, figured out a lot of stuff.
That's a jump.
And then we got this legal bill that we weren't expecting. It was, like, a $40,000 legal bill, and it was going to eat, like, all our cash. And we were like, oh, man, this is bad. This is stressful. But I remember the feeling, because Brendan and I would go play tennis every morning. That was, like, our thing back then.
Okay.
And I remember going to play tennis, thinking to myself, like, okay, this is bad. Like, we're going to run out of cash really quickly. But, like, it is kind of amazing that these people are relying on us. And it stands out to me in the moment. It was like, what, right when we could have gotten really bad, made us realize actually we'd built something really valuable, you know? That's, and so then we raised the money, and, you know, that was the last time we ever had to raise capital, actually. But it was like that moment, I think, of stress made it clear that we'd actually built something cool.
So you were helping customers mainly with video hosting.
Yeah.
When did you guys decide to expand to become a comprehensive platform with editing tools, with recording tools? What was happening in tech and SaaS that you were like, this is the direction we need to be going in?
Yeah, I mean, so our strategy for a very long time was basically to be the best, like, video hosting, management, analytics platform we could be, and then integrate with every other thing. So, like, integrate with every platform we possibly could, and think, like, okay, when you're building your stack of stuff, like, you want to see the video hosting, you're going to need a video host, we'll just be the best in that thing.
Yeah.
And because we were more or less bootstrapped, I think from the beginning, we learned how important focus was for us. And we really, I mean, we still pride ourselves on building a really high quality product. And so being focused allowed us to do that. So that was exactly like, why would we build this other thing? Maybe we couldn't do it as well. We're going to integrate with the person who can do it, or the company that can do it the best. And we'll be world class at video hosting. So we said no to a lot of things over the years that customers asked
and,
us.
I mean, so, and we were basically on that strategy from 2007 to 2021.
Okay.
So an extremely long time with this exact thing, staying focused, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But we had gotten lots of requests for these other types of features, for editing features, recording, webinar software. And we just didn't, we thought it would get us too off focus. And then COVID happened. And the big change that we saw there that was really clear is that people started to see their computer as a camera. And the expectations for who should make video and who shouldn't was, that's like, shifted very, very rapidly. So, like, in that moment, and today, right, it's pretty normal to say to somebody, like, your marketer on your team, like, hey, can you make a video to launch this product? Or put on this webinar to show off this thing, or do this event, or edit this thing? Like, we say that really easily, but it actually is, like, we're really early into this change, and that change happened at that moment. We saw that, and we interviewed, trying to get our, like, hands around this, hundreds and hundreds of customers, of competitors, of people who weren't using a solution. We basically saw the same thing from everybody, and that convinced us maybe this is the moment that we should really think about expanding the footprint of what it is we do.
Like, knowing that the computer is a camera feels like a huge aha moment. Totally makes sense. You mentioned that customers had for years been asking for certain features. How did you then prioritize which features to introduce first?
Yeah, so like the top of the list for us was live and webinar.
Okay.
That was the one that we probably got asked for the most.
Yeah.
Maybe that and editing. And it's funny, I think that in addition to seeing the computer as a camera, it also, the video marketing space had matured a bit.
Yeah.
And so while we were like, we're going to be really focused on hosting, customer expectations start to change. So like when Chris said, we interviewed hundreds of customers and people in the market, and they're like, we expect this to be together. We want this together. It's super painful to have these things differently. And in fact, the life of the company, so many people would finish a webinar and upload it to Wistia and to help with the post-event stuff. And so the top of the list were webinar, editing, because again, so many people said, I would just like to take a small snippet of this. Could you please let me do this? And we're like, no, we're going to stay very focused.
I have that use all the time.
Yeah.
It's a very common use. People love a snippet.
Well, it was interesting because, like, after we started doing that, the editing was the first thing we launched, I think?
Editing was the first one we launched.
And I remember launching it. The honest truth is that it felt, like, embarrassing because, like, the version of editing that we put in at the beginning was so minimal it could trim the ends off a video. And I remember thinking, like, can we even make a video to, like, talk about this? Like, can I even tell people this? And we put it out there, and the response was insane. It was like, oh, I've been waiting for this forever. This is amazing. Oh, my God, blah, blah, blah. And then we saw people instantly start to use it. And that was the first sign of, like, hey, maybe this really is right.
Yeah.
That, like, putting this all in one is going to save people that much time.
Yep.
And it's, you know, continued to be true since then.
Can you share some behind the scenes stories about the product development process? And were there any pivotal moments where you had to make some tough calls about the direction of the platform? Let her rip.
I think one piece is when we decided on pursuing the strategy, like, we're going from a place where we had this extreme focus, and our team was not that big at this time. It was probably 100 people, maybe, and then the product design engineering team was half that, let's say 50 people.
Yeah,
it was pretty intimidating because we knew hosting really well, and we were obviously, you know, think highly of our abilities, but to be able to basically, we're going to add editing, we're going to add reporting, we're going to add live, and we're going to do it all at one time. That was what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's a pretty tall order, and it's a lot to get right. And so we're operating in a place where we have a fairly mature product that's pretty polished. And, like Chris is describing, the moments where we launched editing, and it's...
They're like, we're not used to feeling...
Something that is like a first version or an MVP. So when we decided on this, we were like, we're going to need to invest a lot more. That was not a really scary decision.
No, yeah.
But we doubled the product design and engineering team in the course of about a year or 18 months. And we hadn't ever hired at that rate or expand the team. It's probably not surprising to say it didn't go perfectly. we didn't get product velocity up for probably another year after that, and it was like a really challenging time getting started.
And it was interesting though, because like we lost, like for a long time we'd always felt like, I think everybody feels this when you're in a market that you think is a good market, is like you can't keep up with demands of customers. Like, and that's a good feeling. It's a feeling of like they're asking you for more stuff because they like the stuff that you have.
Yep.
And so we'd always had this excuse of like, well, our team is so small, so like we can't go, like, of course we're limited in how fast we can go. And we kind of, in that moment that we had so many more resources, so many more people, we kind of lost that excuse of being understaffed. And the interesting thing was we were no longer understaffed, we thought. And we're making progress, but it was like slower than it should have been. And this raised a signal, was like, well, what else can we change? And that led to a moment of realizing like, hey, what if how we operate, and what if there's a cultural element here that is actually slowing us down? And that was like really, we did not expect to see that. Honestly, we thought we were like the shit. Like, we thought everything we were doing was great. So, you know, we're like, look at us. We've been doing this so long. It's so successful. The ways that we work are good.
Yeah.
And people coming in see the way that we're working with and assume that's the way you should work. But interesting things that were happening were like, we would spend a lot of time on a roadmap and trying to make the roadmap like perfect. And so we'd have these big meetings and everyone would come with their roadmap. And we'd before them prepare to ask like our hardest questions to try to be like, is this the right order? Like, is this the first thing on the list? And what we didn't understand was that actually what was happening is that when a team would organize their roadmap, they would kind of put the thing at the top that they felt was the least risky, that was the easiest to defend, had the most data, often had the most broad usage. But that wasn't necessarily the thing they thought was going to have the biggest impact.
Interesting.
And sometimes the thing that's going to have the biggest impact might even be something really small that has like a small amount of data on it, and it's like number 7.
But high risk.
But maybe higher risk because you don't have the same data. And so when we flipped the culture, we basically said, okay, roadmaps, you own it. Like, we're not going to approve roadmaps. What we want is just like, we want you to ship every 2 weeks something of value to the customer. We don't really care what it is. We believe if you ship quickly, it's going to improve. And the shocking thing about this was the speed that the culture shifted. So within like a month, we had gone from feeling slow to suddenly feeling fast.
Yeah.
I mean, we had teams that said, it's going to take 6 months for us to do this. And then it was done in 2 weeks. It was insane.
Did the speed surprise you as well?
I think it was a pretty humbling moment because we went for a decade or more in this basically where we had like fairly tight control over what was happening for a small team.
Yeah.
I think we had reached the limit of what we could achieve with that.
Yeah.
Like, is what Chris is describing. And so there was a lot of having to let go of like the first version's might be really good. or it's going to be perfect, which is, you spend a long time doing this, you get better and you have instincts for how to do it.
Totally.
And you say, in order to go faster and to get to a bigger scale, like, teams must just do. Like, they must do and they will be judged later and they will learn and do that. So, like, yes, surprised by the speed. Like, once we aligned on the culture that we wanted,
yeah,
I think was, like, pretty pleasantly surprised by how quickly that happened. Then we had a whole host of other problems, too, right? Like,
yeah.
It, like, first versions of things were pretty embarrassing. And that's, like not the fault of the team. Like we said, we really yeah. want
the priority
speed,
was shipping.
Product yeah, right. velocity and learning. And I think that was the right decision. And then that stuff, you can use speed as a tool to get quality later, but you can learn so quickly when you do it. So it was a huge adjustment. I'd say it was a big adjustment for me. It was a big adjustment for, still a big adjustment for the company,
yeah.
but it is working really well.
And it's worth saying just some of the numbers, which is like, in 2022, we had this bigger team. We had 12 product launches that we told customers about. We figured this out in like October of 22. 23, we had 73. Wow. And this year we're already at over 100. And so what's crazy is that it's changed so much about how we build and so much about how we learn. And the truth is, it also meant that like there was a huge ripple effect, because once you start shipping really fast, iterating with customers, then it's like, how do you market all this stuff?
Well,
because you have tons and tons of things, and like, how do you pick? And it's, we've had to rethink how we do a lot of our go-to-market basically because of this.
Yeah, well, that I was going to ask you.
Oh, really?
Talking about marketing.
Okay.
It's like you knew these questions ahead of time.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that.
From a marketing and product marketing perspective, what do you think has been the hardest thing about going from point solution software to a full-blown platform? How do you decide, like, we're going to tell them about the editing tool or the live?
I think the hardest thing, and we're still dealing with this, is it takes a really long time to shift market perception. So we've been a video hosting provider for more than a decade. That is what, if you've heard of Wistia, that's probably what you have heard of. And so I think it's been hard to be patient about some of that. They were like, okay, we've launched live and we've launched these things. And like, we know it, right? Because we've been talking about it internally for years and years and years. But it takes a lot of repetition to the market and fairly simple messages. And I'd say historically we get bored pretty easily, right? So we're like, we've told the story a few times. So now it's time to tell a new story. But really, we need to like keep educating and keep doing this, because there is just a huge lag in market perception.
I think the other thing that's hard about it is like, you have a story you want to tell that like you see on paper that like makes rational sense to you. And then there's the reality of like, really what problems are people actually trying to solve today? So we have this vision of all these things all in one. You've heard from the research, this is what people want. And then you go to the market. There's some people who want that, but most of the time, everyone's just trying to do their job, especially in B2B. But you might have one discrete issue that you want help with. And so we've shifted over time to really try to figure out like, what's the job to be done that each product can help with, and just get someone in for that and make that really successful. And if you do that, it becomes really easy to expand from there. But that, again, that's different, because it's like the number of products we have is huge. So it's just, to reference an earlier episode we did today, it's really about capital allocation of the messaging itself.
Yeah. We should get new shirts that say, we are a platform.
There you go.
Over and over and over again. Yeah.
We're front a platform. And back.
Yeah.
Yep.
Make no mistake, folks. We are a platform. Looking ahead to next year, what video problem are you most excited to solve for your customers?
One of the things that we're seeing really work in our marketing is atomizing content. And taking a big piece and not just marketing it once, but treating content like a product and marketing it over and over and over again and doing all the different ways. And recognizing that people want to consume it in different ways. Like some people just want the long form. Some people want the short form on TikTok, or some people want the version on LinkedIn that explains more details behind the scenes and then still shows the clip. And we're working on a bunch of stuff around atomization to make that a much easier process for one person to make many clips from a video, mm-hmm. to find the right clips, to edit them easily, to keep it on brand. And so there's a lot of stuff there that I think will really just flow into people's workflows really well.
Yeah, I think related to that, so we've had our live product in market for 2 years now, and we're just getting to the point where like the promise of having it in a platform, we can start to do some really interesting things. So that's a great example of being able to help people with the pre-event workflow, the live event, and doing all the post-event stuff, like atomizing it. But I am, I kind of said this earlier with my thing that has me talking too loud. One thing I was nervous about.
We had to bring that back. I was waiting.
Of doing this is like losing focus, right? Or you can go from something that worked really well, point solution, to broadening your focus. And then, you know, like you're like, oh, we do this well, so we're just not going to bother with it. Because like that's the best. So we'll just leave that alone. And I think we have been very intentional about making sure we're investing in the core of Wistia, which is video playback, speed of processing these assets. Like those are things that help all of these customer problems. And so we've been investing that the whole way, but a lot of the things that we've had behind the scenes are going to start to hit this fall and next year that are going to make all customers' lives better. And that makes me very excited.
It's very cool.
What is the biggest challenge in the video space today?
I think the biggest challenge is most people are like overwhelmed because every social channel requires different content. Your website needs constant updating. You need to refresh old things that are working. And I think that a lot of folks are biting off more than they can chew. And it's very overwhelming. And so I think like trying to figure out which channels to focus on, how you're going to have systems in place that let you actually continuously improve the videos on your site, lean into one channel, I think is really, really important because it's so overwhelming otherwise.
It's a great answer.
I like that. What's the biggest opportunity for video?
I think right now there's a huge opportunity in B2B that you're hearing about here, but is like building personal brands like alongside B2B brands. Inside of them, work with people externally on it. But the reach...
When you say personal brands, do you mean like individuals at the company?
I mean either individuals at the company or like influencers that you have a very close relationship with. We're just seeing like from a social perspective, all the algorithms have changed a ton. You used to get tons of organic reach on like a branded account. It's almost impossible to get any organic reach now. You often have to pay to do it. They're never going to throttle individual reach because they're going to kill all the content, so they can't. And I think that we're all so used to filtering the world through like influencers and topics that we like, that is how we're building trust and that is how we're deciding which brands to work with. And so I think you have to figure out a way to do that alongside your brands. And I think that's hard, but I think we've seen massive success from that.
Have you had to change who your ideal customer is when you made the switch from point solution software to platform?
We haven't really, and part of that was driven, what drove us from point solution to platform was interviewing our core customer base, which is B2B marketers, marketing teams at 50 to 200 person companies. And so a lot of that was born out of wanting all of that in one place because people are really strapped for time. They're super overwhelmed and having those workflows together. So that was convenient for us because we felt like we knew that market really well.
Right. I do think that what we've realized is like people can start with something really small and make it really simple and easy for them to start. And that might mean it's a startup. It might mean it's often a small part of a big company. But the where they end up over time is very different. So where before there was one thing they could get, as they start to add all these other products together and they start to like leverage the benefits of the platform, the impact you can have is much greater. And so you often end up dealing with more large companies who are basically doing all the things when they come in the door. They're just looking to like save time, improve their workflows, improve their data. And so that is the difference from where it was before, but it's still pretty much the same. And I think there's another thing in all of this, which is like the kind of humbling learning is like, we've been doing this for 18 years. So it's really easy to think that when you're doing something for a long time, that like your market must be mature. And Brennan said that on the hosting side, it was starting to feel like the market's mature. But the reality is like the change that happened from seeing your computer as a camera basically made our market early stage again. And that has forced us to work in a different way. And so like just getting comfortable with having things that are more rough to start.
Right.
That's, of course you do that in early stage market.
Right.
And shipping really fast and iterating really fast and not knowing where you're going to end up. Early stage market makes sense, mature market not as much. And it's kind of this recognition of like, the market doesn't care we've been doing it for 18 years at all. Like, market doesn't give a shit. It's just what they want is a better solution right now. And so you have to lean into that and embrace it. And I think that's been at the heart of like a lot of the change.
It kind of makes sense though with the age, right? You're 18, you're kind of reinventing yourself again, another stage of life. Congratulations to Wistia.
Yeah, thanks so much.
What is the secret to staying in a co-founder relationship and being best friends for 18 years?
I would say...
more than 18, right?
Relationship first, business second, which is maybe counterintuitive advice. But I think if you're in a, you have a business partnership, you're not going to have that business partnership succeed unless you actually spend time and work on it and care about it and put that before the business, and then the business will do better as a result.
Yeah, and I think when you work with people, like when you work with your best friend or you work with people who are your friend or people you really like, I think we've just learned that like you have to recognize that and say that out loud and then get the benefits of it, which is like when Brent and I give each other feedback, we give each other the harshest feedback you possibly could out of respect for our friendship, which is like we're not going to hold back. And I think there's like, you know, in any company you're trying to build, we know that like having trust as a basis for all relationships and decisions makes us make better decisions. Like people are more honest, they share bad data, all this. When you have a trust environment, all that stuff comes out. If you don't have trust, you don't. And so I think like our friendship has created that for us. And I think it is a part of the culture.
Well, because it trickles down.
Yeah, where everybody hopefully can be in an environment where they feel like they really trust each other. They can actually say the truth. We get better decisions more quickly. We're on the same page. So
if you guys vibe, Wistia vibes.
There you go.
Wild card questions. What is your go-to karaoke song? And can you sing it right now?
Oh, boy. Fat Lip.
Is it? I haven't heard you sing that.
That's a new answer.
We'll take that one out.
I'm not a big karaoke singer. I sing Billie Eilish's song from the Barbie movie every night to my daughter when she goes to sleep. It's not a karaoke song.
Goodness. Do you cry as you sing it?
He's always crying.
Yeah, I cry all the time.
Just thinking about it.
And she also says, Daddy, could you please play it from the phone? Because
not you.
Your singing is very poor.
Who is your brand crush at the moment?
Lululemon, besides Lululemon?
Yeah, besides Lululemon.
Who is the crush?
So you guys have a crush on yourselves. Is it Wistia?
I'm not going to say that. That's so...
All right, and I think that's
okay. That was fun. Thanks, Sylvie.
Thanks, Sylvie.